This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. There are six candidates running for the Democratic nomination in Michigan's 6th Congressional District. The winner of the August primary will take on longtime Republican incumbent Congressman Fred Upton in the fall. David Benack is one of those six Democrats. He is a history professor at Western Michigan University. Thank you very much for being here.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
So first of all, tell our audience about yourself and why it is that you are running for Congress in Michigan's 6th District.
Thank you. I grew up in Michigan. I've been here pretty much all my life. I come from a family up north, a family farming in Alpena area. And I went to Michigan State. All of my schooling, I was in public schools here in the state, which is one of the things that's got me into this race is the state of our public schools across the country and how we need to really put a lot more emphasis on bringing them back to being the best in the world, which they absolutely can be. But so I finished up at Michigan State and then left. Like so many people in our state, I had to leave to find employment. Ended up living in Louisiana for about 10 years, where I worked as a history professor at a small school just outside of New Orleans. Then got a chance to come back to Michigan, was really excited. Been back here in Southwest Michigan, teaching at Western for about 5 years. Didn't really get into politics until relatively recently. I've always been into more issue-oriented activism, particularly environmental justice topics. And didn't really make the transition to partisan politics until Senator Sanders decided he was going to run for president. I'd followed his career for a long time, ever since he'd voted against the Iraq War. I thought that was a very principled stand, even though it was an unpopular vote for him to make at the moment. And so when he announced he was going to run for president, I got very excited. We worked on the campaign, knocked on thousands of doors, made thousands of phone calls, and ended up lucky enough to be one of the three people from the state he selected to represent progressive reform at the Democratic National Platform Committee. While I was at the committee, I really came to grips with what I saw as the main reason I'm running now. And that is we've allowed this system to be created where we're at the point of basically auctioning off seats in the legislature. It's not really an electoral system anymore. It's just an auction. And what that means is that candidates and elected officials, when they run their campaigns, they are going to the people who are the wealthiest people, who are the corporations, who can write them those $2,000, $3,000, $5,000 checks without thinking about it, so that they can have so much money that they can just outspend anyone else in the race. And that's problematic because those are the very same people who are intent upon preserving the inequalities in the system that exist, whether those are inequalities of race, class, gender, economic access, healthcare. All those things are what this system of inequality that exists is built upon, and the people who are benefiting from that inequality are the same people who can spend $5,000 to get the candidates to do their bidding.
Well, let's start there then. How do you get us back to elections as opposed to auctions to pick our representatives?
It's hard work. And that's really, to put it bluntly, it's really hard work. We have to go out and talk to voters wherever they are. And we have to be willing to cross ideological divides. We've been out canvassing. Last couple weeks when we had all that snow, we were out knocking on doors. A couple weekends before that, when it was 3 degrees outside, we were knocking on doors because this is Michigan. It's cold. It snows in the wintertime. We can't sit home and make phone calls and hope we're going to get people to support us when it comes time for us to need their help. And we have to reach out to people who might not on the surface be in the same page as us. Like an example, just this last weekend, we were out canvassing. We walked up to a house that we were going to knock on the door. I looked in the garage and tacked to the garage wall was a Trump yard sign. Yeah, it left me a little bit concerned, but I went up and talked to the guy. He was outside. We had a great conversation.
Is he going to vote for you?
I don't know if he'll vote for me, but you know, we've actually got a lot of Trump supporters who've decided they're going to vote for me in the election. And it's because in the campaign, I don't agree with Trump on basically anything. I think he's doing a very poor job as president. But a lot of the people who voted for him in 2016 did it because they were facing terrible times. They were unemployed. They were unable to pay their mortgage. They're facing massive student loan debt. They couldn't pay for their health care. And he was telling people the system is rigged and working Americans are the ones who are paying the price. And that's something that resonated with them. And now he hasn't stepped up to the plate and done any of the things he said he was going to do to address those issues. But those are issues that every person in this district still faces today. And unless we do something about it, our political system is going to continue to decay because these are the most pressing problems that we face.
So you mentioned growing up on a farm. One of the issues on your website is a progressive agricultural policy. What is a progressive policy for agriculture?
What I mean when I say progressive, so this is it's a great question. The difference to me between liberal and progressive is that a liberal ideology is to fix the symptom of a problem. Let's say in agriculture, if farmers are facing uncertain times, and they are. Farmers are in very dire straits in terms of their ability to make their payments and to feed their families. So what do? As liberals, we create subsidies so that farmers can pay their bills. That's not fixing any problem. To me, the progressive solution is to say, what is the problem and how do we fix the actual problem? For instance, we have an agricultural system that since the 1950s has been based upon the premise of go big or go home. The number of farms is decreasing. The size of the average farm is increasing. We're corporatizing agriculture. And when we corporatize agriculture, what those farmers are growing is monocrop systems that are chemically intensive. And that means massive mechanization, fewer people on the farms, more poisons dumped upon our soil and into our water, and the creation of commodities at such a rate that they're driving down prices across the entire globe in massive overproduction. And the only reason that those farmers are still in business is because of the subsidies we're paying them. So the progressive solution here is let's think of a better way to do it. And let's take the money we're already spending on agriculture in the form of subsidies, and let's help farmers bridge from the current monocrop chemical intensive system to a sustainable, diverse agricultural system that will protect the productivity of the soil, protect the water, protect the health of workers, protect the health of families. It will bring more workers back onto the farm. It will create more opportunities for small businesses in the communities that supply those farms. When we do this, we can radically transform rural America, bring back jobs, and protect our water resources, protect our health, and really improve the economy all around.
The latest campaign finance reports show that there is a fair amount of money being raised by candidates in this race, not so much by you.
That is correct.
There's four candidates running for the Democratic nomination who've raised over $100,000, and two of them have raised over $300,000. Mm-hmm. And of course, the winner goes on to November against Fred Upton, who will be very well funded for his reelection. So I guess the question I might ask on behalf of Democratic voters who want to pick the winning horse here is, can you run a competitive campaign in the fall, or can you raise the money that's going to be needed to run a competitive campaign in the fall?
There's a number of components to that, and the first one I'll start with is it's a completely false premise. Look around the race. Look around who has been visible, who has created support, who is actively in the community and cultivating relationships with voters, and that's us. Look at how much money we've spent versus how much other money campaigns have spent. Other campaigns have spent $100,000 and you can't see anything that they got for it. That's because our campaign is built around a movement. We have 200 people who've signed up to volunteer. We have people giving 20, 30, some people giving more than 40 hours a week in complete volunteer efforts to support the movement. And that's the only way we're going to move forward. If you want to think about just raw dollars, think about how much money Fred has and how much money he has access to. It does not matter who we run as a Democratic candidate. Fred is going to have immense amounts of money beyond what any Democratic candidate is going to bring to the table. So if you think that being able to bring, $2 million or $3 million to a race instead of $1 million, is going to have you win, when Upton is going to be able to spend three times that, it's a completely false narrative. And if you look at the history of money in this race, the closest we've ever come to winning was in 2012 when the candidate raised a grand total of $300,000 and got about 45% of the vote. Now, if you look just in 2016, the candidate raised $1 million and didn't win a single county. So it's not the dollars that matter. It's the ability to connect with voters. And on top of it, after the primary is over, whatever Democratic candidate is left standing is not going to be wanting for money, because then they're going to get the support of absolutely every Democrat in the area and around the country who's going to want to see Mr. Upton finally removed from that seat. So money is only an issue in this race if you need it to get through the primary. And yeah, we need some because we print literature and we have two offices already, but we haven't raised near what other people have, but we're a lot less concerned about it than what those other candidates are.
This is a seat which has been Republican for as long as anyone can remember. This is the first time I can remember since I've been here that there was more than one Democrat actually running for it. But I guess the question that someone might have is, if you look at trying to take a seat that the Republicans have been held for so long, is a guy who identifies as a Bernie Sanders Democrat, in other words, more progressive probably than your average Democrat or more progressive than other Democrats, is that the right candidate to run and try and unseat a longtime Republican incumbent?
It's the only type. If you look just in this district and look at the 2016 primary, of all the candidates who are running on both sides of the ballot in the 2016 primary, Senator Sanders had the most votes by a large margin of every single candidate, both Democrat and Republican, that was running. After him was Cruz. After Cruz was Trump. After Trump was Clinton. The district is long considered to be this Republican stronghold. I do not believe that it is. The district is an anti-establishment district, and largely. It's a district that voted heavily for Sanders in the primary, then voted for Trump in the general, and in 2008 voted for Obama when he was running on a platform of hope and change. He was running on a progressive agenda, was what he ran on in 2008. If we look at how this race is going to play out, we've seen in a number of really good peer-reviewed academic studies from all over the country that Democrats vote for Democrats, Republicans vote for Republicans, and no matter what you do in a general election, those Republicans vote for Republicans and Democrats vote for Democrats, and it does not change. And any idea that we can win this race by trying to get some moderate Republicans to come over and vote for Democrats is absolutely false. If we look at the number of special elections that have been going on since the 2016 election, and we've seen a really significant number of Democratic victories, the place where they're picking up votes is independents, particularly more left-leaning independents. The only way we can win this seat is if we get people excited and motivated, and we get more people than have ever turned out to vote to show up. And the only way we're going to do that is by talking about what people actually want to talk about. You say, you're right, I'm to the left of a lot of Democrats, particularly establishment types, and a self-defined Sanders-style Democrat. But all the things that I'm talking about are things that study after study, poll after poll, shows the majority of the American public wants. Single-payer universal health care, free college tuition, $15 minimum wage, real clean water protections. All of these things are popular with more Americans than they're unpopular with. And if we're not running on those issues, we're going to lose again. I mean, it's just that simple. We can't motivate people by saying, we're going to be the most moderate possible Democrat that you can find. That doesn't get anybody excited. That doesn't get people to turn out and vote when they haven't voted in the past.
David Benack, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
David Benack is one of the six candidates running for the Democratic nomination in the 6th Congressional District in Michigan. The winner will challenge Republican Congressman Fred Upton in November. A longer version of the interview with David Benack can be found at WMUK.org. Invitations for an interview have also been extended to the other candidates running for the Democratic nomination in Michigan's 6th Congressional District. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.